Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Larry Massett, and I'd like to sell you this beautiful American Eagle door knocker. It's patriotic. It is made from genuine tropical hardwood. It can also be used as a fax modem. No home should be without one. The cost is only... I'm not sure what it costs. I mean, I can tell you what you would have to pay some guys down in the Amazon rainforest to ship it up here, but lately I've been hearing that one ought to figure cost in a broader way. As in, what does it really cost to cut down the Amazon? Who is going to support the people who can't live there anymore? What is the value of the birds, the plants, the medicines, which will no longer be available there? What's the cost of the possible effect on the Earth's climate? Well, golly, I don't know. It could be that this is a very expensive door knocker. Our show today from producer William Drummond is about the cost of another all-American item, crime. No home is without it.
Senator, this is 23 with a 32-year-old male who was shot once in the right thigh, lateral thigh entered. We don't see an exit wound.
It's a Monday night in early spring at the emergency room of Mount Sinai Hospital. It's a trauma unit that's specially set up to handle the most serious of cases. Many of the people who come in are suffering from beatings, stabbings, gunshot wounds. This gunshot victim is 33 years old. That makes him older by far than most of the shooting victims who come here. The average age of gunshot victims is a little over 21 years, and the emergency room nurses are used to seeing gunshot and trauma victims returning because of repeated brushes with violence.
One guy came in, this was kind of interesting, multiple gunshot wounds, no, stab wounds. Walked out against medical advice, came back the same night, gunshot wounds. Had a colonoscopy already from a shot that he received whenever. He had cocaine stuck in his rectum. He's hiding it out from someone.
Well, you have the immediate costs, quite obviously. The costs in human lives, the costs in human property, costs in terms of human psyche.
Donald Heider is professor of public management at Northwestern University.
But you have secondary or intangible costs, and that's basically the fear of people being on the street, of sending their children to school, of any more living in an urban environment, and most important of all in this city, the deep commitment to the neighborhoods themselves, which has been part of the vitality and the whole base of the city.
How many gunshots did you hear?
My name is Leola Spann, and my home, I'm from Natchez, Mississippi, and came here in 1952. Moved in the Austin area in 1984. At that time, that was just the beginning of the change of the neighborhood, resegregating it from white to black.
Mrs. Spann recalls a time when she had to walk her daughter to school because the racial tensions between blacks and whites were so strong. Today, she lives in one of the comfortable, neatly kept houses along Monitor Street. Not too far away, however, the middle-class housing gives way to block after block of blighted buildings.
A community cannot thrive without good businesses. And because of the community changing from white to black, a lot of companies left the community. People that were put in homes that they couldn't afford from the very beginning, you began to see the deterioration because of the fact people were not financially able to keep up the properties that they had been put into. So that is the beginning of some of the deterioration of the community as I see it.
Every Monday at the Austin area police station, the police officials listen to what people from the neighborhood have to say about crime and safety. These meetings are a part of an experiment in bringing police services closer to the community. The name of the program is the Chicago Alternative Police Strategies, or CAPS. The idea of CAPS is based not on making more arrests, but instead in organizing residents to prevent crime. Certain people are recruited from each neighborhood to serve as the eyes and ears of the police. They bring their findings to the meeting. Velda Bruin is one of the so-called facilitators and is the liaison with one segment of the Austin area.
Violence is every day and every time you walk the street. So as soon as you walk out of wherever you live at, as soon as you walk out of any building, you step into violence.
Has anybody in your family, your immediate family, or any of your personal friends been affected by violence?
I think some months ago, my brother was attacked on the porch where a boy put a gun up to his head and took his starter jacket off of him. And, you know, it's things like that that you live with. You know, you can't wear decent clothes. You have to take them out in a paper bag, put them on when you get there, and take them off when you come home. So, you know, that's it.
The perception of violence, perception of fear is a real issue that we've got to deal with.
Because he's named Leroy O'Shields and has 27 years on the Chicago police force, one expects to find a cop who looks like actor Brian Dennehy. But O'Shields is an African-American who holds 2 master's degrees and is the police commander in charge of enforcing the law in the Austin area. Stern but soft-spoken, O'Shields argues that the effort to make the public a part of policing in Austin has worked, and it's paying dividends. But he concedes that public fears run deep. For example, most residents are reluctant to use public areas such as parks after dark. O'Shields thinks that the fears have been reinforced by the emphasis on violence in the media.
There's real violence that the media portrays. And then there's synthetic violence in the form of entertainment that the media sells to the public, makes money off of, that the television stations and that the movie producers make. So there you have it. And that influences young minds.
What's up, boss man?
I
was just walking?
Yeah, I got into it, my old lady, man. She was...
What, she tripping on you tonight, man?
Check day tomorrow.
Oh, okay. You gonna be out here long?
Nope. I'm trying to get in the house.
Okay, all right, boss.
That's it, man.
Officer Gibbons of the Austin District is on routine patrol this night. He cruises past roving bands of youths along Central Avenue and Madison Street. Officer Givens supports the new community policing effort, and he's certain that once it's adopted citywide, it will make a difference. But in the short run, he has to keep these youngsters moving.
What's up, fellas? What's going on? What's going on, boss?
Ain't nothing going on.
Y'all had to give up this alley, man.
Okay,
we'll
just,
no,
man, we
have to go
through
that.
Okay. I'll just
stop talking to him.
All right, boss, man. All right.
You need to come back. You ain't gonna see me out here.
Officer Givens knows that many of these youngsters are dealing drugs, but he does not think that they are members of well-organized gangs. He thinks, for the most part, they are opportunists.
Like I said, these people out here, they try to survive, but they're going in it the wrong way.
The school is located almost in the center, is surrounded by buildings in Rockwell Gardens. On many days, members of different gangs shoot at each other from building to building. Because of the mere location of the school, many, many times those bullets zoom in back and forth across our playground.
Donald Moran has been the principal at Grant School for 19 years. His school is surrounded by Rockwell Gardens, which has been one of the projects struck by violence. He says educating children becomes an almost impossible feat in such an atmosphere.
I'm amazed at how well those youngsters survive under all this pressure. I say it every day. I say it to the teachers. They're miracles walking through this building.
Principal Moran invited me to talk to 60 7th and 8th graders gathered in an assembly in the school auditorium.
What is violence?
Violence is something that's not good. Violence is when people get hurt, is when people get killed. Violence is danger, if you ask me.
Have you ever seen it? Have you ever had any personal experience with violence?
Yeah. A lot. I've been in fights. I've been in a place where a person tried to shoot at me. I've been in a lot of violence.
Our youngsters, in many cases, over very, 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 very small conflicts, you bumped into me in the hall. You looked at me. You stared at me. Why are you looking at me like that? These are fighting words.
Has anybody else had any experience with violence?
I got jumped on. Had a fight after school. And then the gangbangers was fighting. And then my brother, he went down there to help them fight. And he got beat up.
Can somebody tell me what a gangbanger is?
An organization of bad people.
Does anybody know any gangbangers? Where do these gangbangers come from? Do they come from outside or do they live here? Where do they come from? Here. Okay, how does somebody get to be a gangbanger?
You go tell somebody you want to be in a gang and then you get blessed.
Why would anybody want to get into a gang?
For protection.
So if they have any problems in school and they fighting, they can have somebody to help them fight if they get beat up or something.
Does everybody agree with that? Is that true? I mean, do you need somebody to protect you to be by your side? Who had her hand up? Okay, what were you gonna say?
If you don't get in the gang, another gang probably think you're in the gang, then they'll try to do something to you. But if you do get in the gang, then the gang that you in could help you.
Has anybody here in his own family or some personal friend of yours ever been a victim of violence? Now think about it.
My cousin, he was with his friends. They thought he was in a gang. He used to stay on Huron. He was coming from the store. And they ran on him and shot him in the head. And his brain was all on the sidewalk.
So he died? What was his name?
Derek.
Anybody else that had a personal experience with violence? I saw all these hands up.
I had a brother one time. He had got shot. He lived over there in the projects called The Village. He had got shot, and it was on the news and stuff. And, you know, I barely watched the news. And that day, some just said, watch the news. And I was watching the news. I was just sitting there, and they said my brother's name. And I was like, Tito Lins, that's my brother. And I jumped up. I was running. I was back running back and forth, screaming and hollering through the house. And my father was like, who got shot? I said, my brother. And first, he thought it was my little brother. And he went and stuck his head out the window, and then so I was like, no, that my big brother. So he jumped up and he ran all the way to Cook County Hospital to go see my brother.
So what was your brother's name?
Tito Lindsay.
Is Tito all right, or what happened to him?
Yeah, he all right now. And when my father got to the hospital, they didn't want to let him in the what's that room, the
emergency room.
And they was like, sir, you can't go in. He says, I don't know what you talking about. That's my son up in there. Y'all better let me up in here. And he went in.
I'll just ask you one final question. And I want you to think about this really, really hard. How do you think your life has been affected by violence?
Running home from school, then you can't go to school because you're going to get jumped on. Then you have to walk around everybody fighting and people shooting. You got to run home from school, can't go outside. It's a whole lot of stuff. Then people selling drugs, then the hypes want to stick you up to get some money.
Okay.
It affects my life in a negative way because it's a lot of young children out here getting killed, and a lot of them have to run home from school. And you know, we should be able to come to school every day without being scared that we're gonna get shot up or anything. So, you know, it's sad to me because we shouldn't have to do things like that in order to learn.
I wanna give a diploma to everyone on this stage. If you're making a beat, try to get an A. No help. And you can do it. You can do it.
I'm out every morning at 8 o'clock coming to work on the school grounds because one morning we were coming to work and shots just rung out and you got about over 200 kids out in the yard, nowhere to run because the school doors are not open.
Mildred Wortham, who grew up in Rockwell Gardens, now has children in Grant School. As a child, she attended the same school before the neighborhood became so violent. The games children play today, Wortham says, are very different.
They go through the playgrounds and they'll play this little game like, how many shells can you find? Now that is heartbreaking, you know, and it's like it's pennies and nickels and dimes, and they'll take them and they'll jiggle them, and that's the effect that they like, well, I came this way this morning, so I'm bringing evidence home to show my mom that they were shooting out here.
Every public housing parent is well aware that many innocent bystanders have been struck by gunfire during battles over drug turf or other confrontations. Brenda Stevenson grew up in Rockwell Gardens and has raised her four children there. A stray bullet struck Stevenson's daughter Megan on the playground. The child's gunshot wound has healed, but the fear and the guilt for the young mother remain.
Now, I knew that I watches my children. But when my daughter Megan got shot out in the playground, I felt this little. I felt like a little ant, you know, because I was not out there watching it, and I had a very bad guilt complex. I was in my office working, and my child asked me, could she go out in the playground and swing just for a little while, and she'll be back in. And I let her go. And that second I let her go, that's when something happened.
This is the operation center to 110. Come in, 110.
You have 110.
110, what floor are you on?
To cope with the lawlessness and the violence in the public housing buildings, the Chicago Housing Authority several years ago resorted to random searches without a warrant of apartments in the projects. The so-called sweeps were eventually banned by the federal courts as a violation of the Constitution. Since gang warfare broke out in early spring, a call for renewal of the sweeps has received wide support throughout the city. Professor Donald Heider says he's not surprised.
Well, I think what happens, Bill, anytime you start using words like that we are in wartime conditions, that there's a natural tendency to say if they're wartime conditions, then martial law prevails, and that all law flows in the order of to the government itself. We have the reality of crime and the perception of crime. You've been in Chicago at a period of time where you have both the reality in terms of homicides and gangland murders and killings at a record level, and the perception, which is running as about as high as any issue I've ever seen in the city.
As happened in the previous experiment with warrantless searches of the projects, the American Civil Liberties Union has opposed the sweeps in court. Brenda Stevenson says the ACLU has no right to make decisions for the residents of the projects.
Well, I've always said the ACLU don't live over here, but they're trying to stand up for people rights, but they don't live over here, in at least in Rockwell, far as I know of. And if they live over here with all the constant gunfire and the constant fighting and gangbanging and drug selling and everything, then they would have a different attitude about how they felt about the sweeps.
The resumption of the sweeps, according to the ACLU, would involve giving up one of the fundamental guarantees of the Constitution. Jay Miller, executive director of the ACLU, says the most significant cost of violence is individual rights.
Most residents say, throw up their hands. And this is the danger that happened in the society, in a society that becomes increasingly violent. People throw up their hands and say, do anything you want to me. And so they're willing to give up their rights. I mean, it's not that much different than, let's say, Germany was in the 30s, in the midst of a depression, a defeated nation, saying, Hitler, if you can put things back on, if you can get us prosperity again, if you can get our life ordered again and stop this disorder, we'll do anything. We'll give up any rights. And they did.
For the hardy merchants who do business along Western Avenue, making a living has become harder and more dangerous in the last few years.
But that's the thing, man. In the last 3 years, we've been hit. Three guys, three guns in your face. And all I could say is, my boy, The money's yours. You don't have to kill anybody. They had 9 people on the floor of the store.
After dark, business falls off because people try to stay off the streets. The surroundings in this particular stretch along Western Avenue are bleak-looking, with many abandoned buildings and vacant lots. But to some astute business people, the very fact that so much vacant land is available could be a sign that the neighborhood is not far from turning around. Chris has done business here for nearly 15 years.
There are already plans for a new bank to enter the area. There are plans in the works for one of the studios out west to put a soundstage on Madison Street. Suddenly you're getting telephone calls about your property, and people are showing a lot greater interest in the west side, the near west side, over here than they ever have before. So while whispers don't mean money, whispers do mean potential.
But realistically, according to Professor Donald Hyder, everything depends on the city getting control of the rampant violence.
If you ask people where is the crime concentrated in the city, they would largely say the west side of the city. The west side of the city has been the poor minority areas and where poor concentration of Afro-Americans may be found. The south side has some pockets of very affluent, middle-class, aspiring professional blacks in the city. What has happened during this last several weeks is that you have had outbreaks of violence on the south side. It has struck at the heart of the black middle-class community, not just meaning the Taylor homes, but beyond the Taylor homes and other high-rise public housing that you have seen. So you, for the first time, have a perception within the black community that this is a totality of a war.
A funeral was held at the Third Baptist Church of Chicago for one of the dozens of victims of the recent violence, the Reverend Jethro Gales, who was stabbed to death. Reverend Gales had been preaching in Chicago for more than 40 years, and his funeral attracted thousands, including civic leaders and politicians. Many of them sounded the same theme that Reverend Maurice Brown mentioned in his prayer.
O Lord, help us to come together. Love one another. Live peaceably with each other. Help us to be Christ-like. Stop the violence. Senseless action. Help us to follow the example of the great leader, Dr. King's nonviolence for social change, who was a disciple of Jesus. In his name we pray. Amen.
The lesson that many have drawn from the frenzy of violence is that the problem cannot be solved by any one segment of the Chicago community. Donald Hyder.
I think for the white community, you have perception that this is a black problem, but you also have in much of the white community, it seems to me, a sense that this is spreading. No man's an island. We're all connected. This is spilling into white communities. This is spilling into the suburbs. And this isn't simply an Afro-American problem.
That message has been taken to heart by Susan Johnson, a member of the clergy who lives in Hyde Park, the middle-class enclave south of the Loop, nestled around the University of Chicago. She says her neighbors are often more willing to lend their sympathy to victims of violence in Bosnia than to fellow Chicagoans in distress.
I hear a sympathy toward Zlata's diary that you would never hear for the writings of somebody who goes to school in one of the gang-ridden schools on the south side.
Susan Johnson and many of her Hyde Park neighbors have been staging vigils against violence. She hopes to build fires in the consciences of those who do not live in the troubled neighborhoods to convince them that they also have a role to play.
It's not just that we live in very close proximity to people we don't know or to people who suffer. It's that we cause their suffering. Right. It's that we live in an environment which enjoys a level of privilege at the expense of people whose lives are ruined.
You have men that I'm sure are filled of anger because they can't really support their families.
longtime Chicago resident Leola Spann.
We've been fighting a war on crime and drugs now for 20, 30 years. And right now we're at epidemic proportion. So we're not doing something right. We've built a tremendous fear in this country, in neighborhoods. We've gotten people where they don't trust each other. You know, even growing up in the South, black and white communities, we had trust. We knew if the white person told you something, that was what was going to happen. If the black person told you something, that was what was going to happen. And that's what we've lost.
Spann and many other people say the answer to stemming the tide of violence is a vast government program, investing in everything from child care to job training to fighting substance abuse. But Leola Spann, who is a great-grandmother, says the fight begins with one person having the courage to walk down the street.
But when I go walk down the streets here in my community or anywhere, and if there's four or five young men coming down the street with the caps turned or whatever way they want to do them, I'm not going to move over for them. They have to. It's very important to me that they go around me, because you see, that says that, you know, I'm your elder and you must respect me. You're going to give me that respect because I'm not going to move, so you have to move around. And I never have had not one young man to ever say anything to me.
That simple message of courage and respect seems to have been lost in the great convulsions that have swept this city, leaving many dead and wounded and many more living in fear. Leola Spann and many others have decided that the cost of fear has been far too high, and they want to recover the lives that were taken from them.
We gotta stop peeping out of these Venetian blinds. We gotta stop running in the house before dark. You know, when I was coming up, there's this African proverbs that you hear people repeat all the time. It takes a whole village to raise a child. When I was a child, a whole village did raise a child. You see, when my grandmother sent me to the store, the lady up on the corner, Miss Betty Monroe, seen me, and if I was doing something, she was going to tell my grandmother. She was going to discipline me, and then she's going to tell my grandmother. So that's not new. It just needs to be revisited.
The Cost of Violence was produced by William Drummond. This program is part of The People Next Door, a special soundprint series funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Write us with your ideas and comments. Write Soundprint, 4000 Brandywine Street Northwest, Suite 620, Washington, D.C., 20016. Cassettes are $12.50, and if you would like to order a cassette with a credit card, call us at 202-885-1285. That's 202-885-1285. Our internet address is soundprint@american.edu. Print is Technical Director Anna Maria De Freitas, Studio Engineer Robin Wise, Production Assistant Francesca Raymond. Our Executive Producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Larry Nassett. This is NPR, National Public Radio.